Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You'll have won a pair of tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix. IndyCar zooms into history with the first ever race around the National Mall, August 22nd and 23rd. Get race ready with all the information you need to know at freedom250gp.com. I say good luck to you. Caller 10-800-636-1067. We do a little thing every afternoon at 4 p.m. It's called the Beltway Blitz. It's kind of a Cliff Notes, to be honest with you. Now, Cliff Notes, I know, Cliff Notes is outdated. You guys had Spark Notes and a bunch of other stuff. Now you got ChatGPT. It's like, summarize the Odyssey for me. And it's like, Christopher Nolan did it in 3 hours, bro. It's about Matt Damon.
Yeah, watch the movie.
But we had things called Cliff Notes. It's a Cliff Notes version of what's going on in the world of DC sports. And we're going to start it on the diamond, please. Bobby Blanco of the Bronx covers the Washington Nationals, Mass and Sports. Bobby, before we get to Jacob DeGrom casually setting a nice little milestone of 2,000 strikeouts against the Nationals. It feels like all 2,000 were against the Nats, by the way. Andrew Alvarez threw well again. And at a certain point, like, the more you do something, the more it is what you do. He's going to be a two-war pitcher for this team. That's the pace he's on to finish off kind of strong. I know it shouldn't be all that special and all that good, but he is kind of making a case to be part of something here going forward. Give me your Andrew Alvarez view.
Yeah, I think, you know, for people who haven't been following, you know, this farm system for the past couple of years, I know maybe you may be more interested right now because the new front office has taken this and revamped it and made everyone a little bit better, elevated everyone's floor. But Andrew Alvarez is one of the, you know, longtime top prospects in the system. At once, I believe he was the top pitching prospect for the Nats. And we're kind of seeing his floor be elevated, right, to like what he, his whole potential. And I give the Nats front office and coaching staff credit for giving him an opportunity earlier this year to pitch extensively in the major leagues. I believe he was the first call when Jake Irvin went down on the IL. And then when Jake came back off the IL, they stuck with him. And they did the hard thing that I don't know if the previous regime would have done, which is cut ties with Miles Michaelis and Zach Fidel. And, but you know, like the veteran guys that they brought in on one-year deals and spared their young guys. This whole rotation is now full of young guys. And Andrew Alvarez obviously being one of them, like you mentioned. And I think he's getting his fair shot. And, you know, crafty lefty, he's not going to blow you away with any incredible stuff. But he's always had this, like, kind of very nice honed-in craft that, like, I think that was very – and analyzing for the Nationals. So yeah, he's getting his full shot finally, getting a lot of major league innings under his belt and can prove that he's getting outs consistently. I think, you know, you're going to look at him, if he finishes the season strong, you're going to look at him coming into next year as a guy that's competing for a rotation spot in spring training.
From a one crafty lefty to a power throwing righty, how about Cade Cavalli? I mean, we've been waiting for him to be this. I think the Nationals expected him to be this for years, but he's dealt with the injuries and various reasons not being able to get back. Now that he's back and established himself, he's started as many games as anybody in Major League Baseball this year, and over the last month and a half been absolutely incredible. What have you seen from him?
I think you hit the nail on the head right there, Toby. It's we've been waiting for this, right? Like the poor guy going through all the injuries that he did, you know, former first round pick, top prospect himself, you know, was the number one prospect in the system for a long time. And then, you know, that spring training where it looked like he was going to make the team and then have to have that Tommy John injury that set him back basically two seasons was brutal. But yeah, we're finally seeing it. And I think that Cade Cavalli is finally comfortable, confident in the major leagues. He doesn't have to worry about, oh, I'm ramping back up, I'm building up, or I need to protect my arm. He is just out there and he's just pitching, and he's pitching with the stuff that we knew that he had since he was coming out of Oklahoma, being one of the top pitching prospects out of that draft class, and then of course in all of the minor leagues. You know, people forget that he went from basically high A to triple A in one season in the minor league. So he's got the stuff. And, you know, the handful of starts last year, at the end of last year, everyone was saying, like, while Mackenzie Gore, you know, was the crowned ace of the staff, you know, Cade Cavalli's stuff was better. And I think we're seeing it right now that he is just going to become a ace-like type pitcher. Maybe not number one, but definitely a number two, no lower than that. And someone who can, like, go out and take control of this rotation. And every time he takes the mound is must-see TV for Nats fans because he's pitching, like, a true ace right now, a guy that you, and any given night can give you something that you saw for Max Scherzer or Steven Strasburg for all those years. That's the kind of pitcher he is right now. It's been a lot of fun to watch. I'm really happy for him, too.
Bobby, let's say 106.7 The Fan made an announcement that I was going to change time slots. And then I didn't change time slots for like a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, a weekend. Then like I got laryngitis or something like that. When is CJ Abrams playing second? What's going on there?
Well, I hope that never happens. I love listening to you guys.
Oh, you're a sweetheart, Robert.
But yeah, I think, you know, it has been kind of a crazy, weird week, right? I mean, it was a week ago today that Blake Butera announced that they're going to move CJ to second base. And keep in mind, it was an announcement. It wasn't like a Nats reporter was going in there asking, hey, have you guys thought about this?
Great point, Bobby.
You know, or someone, or, you know, picked it up from like, the agent or something. Hey, they're thinking about it. The Nats announced this themselves when they didn't really have to. And I think it's unusual that they did that and then, one, wait a week to fully do it. I mean, why announce that if he wasn't ready to take second base that night, you know? So, like, maybe keep working at it. And then once he's ready, hey, we're thinking about doing this. We're going to give CJ a shot at second right now, yada, yada, yada. But now CJ's dealing with an injury. And luckily, it doesn't seem like a very serious ankle injury. All images reportedly came back fine. He's not going to play tonight, doesn't sound like. Hopefully, he can play tomorrow in Miami because he couldn't do baseball activity yesterday. So I don't know how serious this ankle injury is. Reports that the imaging came back fine, but it all kind of just adds to this weird, I feel like, unnecessarily forced drama from the Nats, one, announcing that he's going to make this move, and then now he didn't play him for a week, and then now he's injured, so it's going to be pushed back even further. I believe it's his right ankle, too, and, you know, for a second baseman, you're using that ankle a lot to turn towards first base. How comfortable are you going to be having him change position when he's dealing with a nagging injury like that? It's going to be kind of interesting to watch, and again, it feels like an unforced error on the Nationals' part.
Bobby, team 7 games under 500, playoff hopes are pretty much gone. But what are you watching last month and a half of the season?
I think as we get closer to September, I'm going to be really curious to see who they call up and as the rosters expand. You know, we just talked about the CJ Abrams move to second, and I think that goes into the conversation of, well, look who they have in the minor league system that can play short. And I think for the first time, you know, CJ had to look over his shoulder a little bit, because if you look at the Nationals' top prospects according to MLB Pipeline, 4 of the top 7 are guys that can play shortstop at a high level. So for the first time ever, he's really had to look over his shoulder and be like, oh, there's guys coming for my job. I really need to play shortstop very well. And he hasn't. So I think of guys like, Seaver King, the first first round pick from a couple of years ago, who's having an outstanding season this year. Will he get a shot at the major leagues? I saw Grant tweeting about Trey Lipsticum. People might forget about him. He's having a career year.
26 bombs. 26 bombs.
He's leading the whole minor league system for the Nationals in home runs. That's ridiculous. So yeah. Good for Trey. I would love to see him get another shot at the major leagues after the seasons he had. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, obviously the playoff kind of run is might be a little bit over with. But who are they going to bring up from the farm system, give a crack at the major leagues, and kind of set up, you know, the offseason talk of, all right, where do we need to address the roster in the offseason and get prepared for hopefully a contending team in 2027?
Bobby, thank you as always, bro. Have a great weekend.
All right, have a great weekend, boys. Thanks for having me.
See you, my friend. There he goes. Local 53 Sounder, please. By God, that's Johnny Cakes, all of those music, sports junkies, and commissioner of the Homies League. Cakesy, when is the draft?
The draft, hold on. I believe it's either September 3rd or 4th. Don't quote me on that.
But it is set.
I think it's at 7. It's set. Go check your Yahoo. We're still dinosaurs that play fantasy football on Yahoo. I know that we're a dying breed, but we're still there.
That's dialed-in commissioner. He's like, I think the draft is sometime.
Well, it's the 3rd or the 4th. It's one of those two nights, but I know the time. It's 7:45 p.m. Eastern time.
I love it so much. Cakes is an excellent commissioner. He deals with the slings and arrows that inevitably come with being a commissioner.
Yes.
Despite being a very nice man, he rules with an iron fist. Eccentric league settings, and this is how we do it, period. No complaints.
Love it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Tobe there knows that it's basically we're playing, it's like Gladiator, it's like 300. There are no waivers. It's first come, first serve, first made to the waiver wire. So I know that threw Danny for a loop the first few years, but he's adjusted now.
I have adjusted.
I love it.
Yeah, there's no waivers. It's two quarterbacks, 6-point passing touchdowns. It's borderline anarchy, but I would never miss it. I love it.
There's a lot happening. There's a lot of plate spinning going on there.
That's how it goes, Cakes. I love that. So you were out at training camp the other day. What'd you make of what you saw, some of the conversations you had out there?
You know what? All the guys that came through our tent were awesome. I mean, we got to sit down with Chig and Revo. They sat down with us together, and they were great. I'm predicting wildly outlandish numbers for Chig Okonkwo in this offense. I need to be talked off the ledge on that. I'm kind of like Danny, who cannot properly diagnose. Is it tall wide receivers,
yes.
Danny? Is
big
that your
wide
thing?
Receivers.
Like,
I love them.
You're just smitten by them. Any guy that looks like Herman Moore or Megatron or, you know, anybody, Randy Moss. I mean, those are some studs that I threw in there, by the way. But yeah, any big wide receiver, Danny's going to improperly put numbers on. But Chig and Revo were great. Terry McLaurin, of course, you know, always an amazing class act, and I'm missing the fourth. Oh, we had Nick Cross as well, so another new addition to the defense. They were great, and I didn't see that much of practice because we were broadcasting during a lot of it, and I was getting my neck burned by the big, giant, glowing orb known as the sun for about an hour and a half of it. I think I'm still lucky to be here, but camp looked good from what I saw. We also had Dan Quinn sit in with us before practice for the day started, so always a good time to get out of camp and see and that it's being professionally run, unlike it was during Dan Snyder's reign of terror.
So I want you to imagine, Cake, so you have a Mike McDermott-type bad beat to start the movie, okay? This is your movie, poker style, right? Your last 30K in, you get a terrible beat. After you've already sat down with Johnny Chan, you're overconfident, you lose the Teddy KGB, you're down and you're felt, okay? You have your last $100, and you have to bet on the 7.5 over-under win total for your local Washington 53, where do you place that hundy?
Ooh, so I'm down to my last 100. I'm either basically going to the homeless shelter, or I'm doubling up and I'm making something of my life.
Yeah, worm is no help. You're driving Kanish's route, right? I mean, you're doing the deliveries. Yeah. You're going to law school at night.
Doing the odd jobs. I'm hiding my bankroll from my girlfriend.
Thank you.
The whole nine.
Played by Gretchen Mol. Toby sleeps on this entire reference.
Gretchen Mol, it's a good pull. Like, that was her only real bit she ever did in Hollywood that I know of, but since you know her name, you may not know more about it than I do. Danny, I'm going to bet the over. I'm going to stick to my guns because, of course, I bet the over when we did our wackadoo schedule, pick the games before the real schedule even comes out. I'm going to stick with the over and just hope that we're going to see the Jaden Daniels and level of offense that we saw back in 2024. Pair that with hopefully, I'm not going to say a vastly improved defense, but it should be a much improved defense from what the abomination that we all had to watch last season. So if I'm down to my last $100 bill, it is going to go on the over for your Washington Commanders.
Which of the new coordinators do you trust more going into year one?
It's a great question. I'm going to go slightly with Durante Jones. I just have a feeling he's going to put these new pieces in the right places to succeed. And I feel like he's got some better tools to work with, obviously, than Joe Witt had. It's like 60-40, 55-45, but I'm going to give the slight nod to Durante Jones here over David Blau. It's not to say I hate David Blau. I'm just going to give a slight nod here at this point to Durante Jones.
Let me just finish the tweet. I hate David Blau, Johnny Cakes, all of them. Cakesy, why do you think they didn't want Deebo Samuel back at all? You see that little story where he was talking about how he thought everything was cool and they never called him or whatever that was? He ended up going back to San Fran. But why do you think they weren't interested at all at not that expensive a price?
I mean, I would say they wanted to get younger, but they actually got an older guy in Diggs than Deebo. So it couldn't have been that. I guess he must just not been a fit for what Blau wants to do on the offensive side. That's the only thing that I can think of. Maybe they just felt like Diggs is a better fit. They saw what Diggs did last year on limited snaps with the Patriots. And for some reason, his market wasn't bigger and it was a perfect fit. So they rolled the dice that there wouldn't be a big market for Deebo. They clearly didn't want Deebo here. So I don't know why he feels so jilted. But look, he lands back in a good spot for him with the Niners with all the injuries they are dealing with over the last few years. So he landed in a good spot, and the Commanders got the guy they wanted to be the number two wide out in Diggs.
You just talked about how high you are on Chig. We talked about this about an hour ago, about some guys that were maybe a little higher on than the general consensus. Is there anybody else on the team that you're feeling a little bit better about that maybe they're being talked about right now?
I mean, I have to feel pretty good about Odafe Owe. I mean, there's a reason that Adam Peters gave him $68 million guaranteed and $100 million to be the pass rusher that they so desperately need to add to this defense. I mean, he has to be a guy that can rack up 12 to 15 sacks. I mean, the Commanders haven't had that guy in quite a long time, and hopefully he's that guy. And obviously they're a little higher on the market than everybody else, than Diggs as well, even though I know that there were some suitors for him late, especially the Chiefs. I know we're mentioned as a team that wanted to bring him on board, but Commanders are high on Owe and on Diggs, and hopefully those guys are both big contributors on each side of the ball that they're on.
Cakesy, thank you as always, my friend. Enjoy the weekend.
Homies League, either September 3rd or 4th. Check the Yahoo site, my friend.
I'll be ready either night just in case. Love you, buddy. There he goes. That is Johnny Cake Sawville, and that is how we Beltway Blitz. So our guy, Tobias Funke, a.k.a. Toby, a.k.a. Toblerone, a.k.a. only during Tech Talk, Toki, has compiled a list of national media, if I can say this, Tobes, correctly,
yep,
not being particularly flattering or kind to your local Washington 53. We wanted to kind of do a forensic examination here and ask you the question, are they right? Do they have a point, or are they missing it, to quote our guy Dan Quinn? I think it's a mixed bag, to be honest with you. I think there's some nuance to it, but I think we could have some fun with this. So either, you know, we can call out a couple things we think are wrong, or say, you know what, they actually are on point with this criticism, etc. National media, not too bullish on our local 53. Do they have a point? That's next on The Fan. Little known fact about old Fannie Mouye, a.k.a. Ranny Douye. This is 100% true. Do you guys remember Z104? I don't know what it is now. I don't know what they're doing over there. But decades ago, it was like the pop music station. No, don't you fade that Prince down just yet. I'm not ready for that. Keep that Prince up. I won a dance contest. Yeah.
A dance contest?
At, what was the name of that place? Polyester's on Z104 was there doing some kind of promotion or whatever, right? So I'm at Polyester's. I think that's the name of the club or whatever it was. I don't want to say the girl's name because I don't know that she'd want that on the record or whatever. But the point was, it was a partner dance contest thing. And we won it. I won $104.
Let's go.
In a dance contest to this song. Hand to God.
That's incredible.
Ask me anything. What do you want to know?
I didn't know you could dance.
Anything else? I don't know that I can now to the same degree, but there's a little lock and a little popping. There were some maneuvers there. I use my giant ass, if I can say that, to my advantage, right? So there's a little bit of humor there where it's like, oh my God, there's just a lot hanging, you know, coming at you.
Yeah.
So to speak. But yes. So the young lady, I was like, listen, we're being judged. Just, you know, smile a lot and act like it's fun and we'll have a chance. And we won.
I can assure you that if there was any sort of contest for anything, something that I would never win, it'd be a dance contest. I stand no chance.
But that happened. And my set, one of my favorite members of all time, and I mentioned this on the show a million times before, but rest in peace, Prince. We went to a joint bachelor party for my buddies, Michael and Ramsey, down in Miami, Florida. And Michael's had a much older brother, still does, but has a much older brother, who lived not too far from Miami, where we went for, kind of centered around for the bachelor party. And, you know, we'd already done the thing where we want to make it super easy. We kind of had money that we were going to spend on stuff sort of in advance. Everyone got their own hotel rooms and stuff. But like, hey, dinner, so we're not doing a thing where we're like waiting around for the check. Can you give me 50? Can you give me 75? It's before Venmo, but we still kind of organized it. And we're all kind of set with finances to make it easy and seamless to go from place to place. Range Transportation was like 15 of us, right? Long and short, he asked for $128. And we're like, for what? For each of us. And he's like, it's tickets to a club. And we're like, tickets to a club? Like, what are you talking about? you know, cover is usually $20, maybe $10. You're a big group. It's like, you know, for a certain kind of bottle service, maybe it's more. What are you talking about? He goes, just trust me. It's a great place to go, and it'll be really fun. And so we're like, all right, man, I guess we'll do that. That's fine. So we gave him this money. This is when our 20s, where that's like a fortune. That's like $41,000 in today's money, right? But anyway, so we give it to him, and we go to this club called Mansion, right, in the middle of Miami. I don't know if it's where it is exactly. I don't really know Miami, but we're there. And he hands us our tickets as we get out of the cabs that we took from our hotel. And on the ticket, it says Sheila E. on the ticket. I'm like, Sheila E. Where do I know that from? What do I know? Why is it? I thought we were going to Mansion. What is that? We're not processing. We're all drinking and having fun and hanging out. Sheila E. is Prince's backup singer. She was doing a concert there at Mansion in Miami, and people that knew, like ball knowers know, Sheila E. is part of the Power Generation, and she's awesome in her own right, a great and accomplished musical artist. And Sheila E. is having a concert that night. And I'm going, still $128, it still seems like a lot. Why? We get in, we get to our section. It's a section we're kind of a little bit roped off because there's a whole bunch of us. And we're slamming drinks and stuff, and here comes Sheila E. and the band. And I go, you guys, look at the stage. There comes Prince. Just playing backup guitar for Sheila E. Prince is playing backup for his band member.
That's incredible.
One of the biggest stars ever is playing backup guitar, playing lead guitar on her tracks, her songs, her everything, her originals. I don't know Sheila E.'s exhaustive catalog, but I'm sitting there going, that's Prince, bro. He played the keyboard. He played the guitar. He played the drums. He played some kind of little tiny, funny looking guitar. He played the double guitar that had, I don't know what the second part of the guitar did, but it did something. He played the bass. He's just up, and you cannot take your eyes off of him, right? And it's even just that was incredible, okay? So her set ends. She does like an hour, is belting out songs, kicking all kinds of ass, and everybody's having a grand old time. People are drinking, everything's flowing, like the women of Capistrano, or Salmon of Capistrano. It's awesome. So we think, okay, that was pretty cool. That's nice. So a few minutes later, spotlight on the stage. Out walks Prince. Do y'all mind if I play a little bit? And the roof blew off of this, you know what?
Yeah, I can imagine.
The couple hundred people, I would say probably 2,000 people that are in this nightclub, that's kind of got, doesn't really have seating. We had seats because we were like, you know, ballers that were spending tens of dollars on rail vodka. But still, we're there, and here's Prince, and then the band just comes right back out, and he goes, I'll just play Purple Rain to start. And I mean, tears are coming out of eyes. Panties are incinerating. Like, no, it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. I am annihilating drinks, hammering drinks, okay? Way overserved. It's not my fault I was served that much alcohol, okay? Hammer drunk. One of the great situations and memories ever. Prince played for another hour and 20 minutes and walks off, and I'm like, that, I'll never see anything like that. We end up at a place called Nikki Beach. This is true. I had gone on a first date with my now wife that week. And I was like, listen, we can't hang out this weekend. I'm going to this bachelor party or whatever. But, you know, maybe I'll see you when we get back and whatever, whatever. We go to Nikki Beach, and it's on the beach, and there are teepees. I found that fascinating. So I'm hammer drunk, and I wander out to a teepee, and the next thing I know, my face is in the sand because I have passed out in the teepee. And I'm aware and conscious, but the world is spinning so fast and I can't get up. And so everybody, we're going to the next venue and everyone's looking for me. The entire search, all the boys, 15 of these guys are like, where is Danny? And I can't, like, I get my phone out and the world is spinning so bad. So I call my buddy's fiance, one of the guys whose bachelor party it is. I get the thought process doesn't, I could have called one of my friends that's there, but I go, it's going to be too loud. They won't hear it or they won't know. So I called the fiance of the guy whose bachelor party we're there for. You with me so far? And yes. I go with my face like this and I go, can you tell them I'm in a teepee? Can you tell them I'm in a teepee? And she's like, I got it. Hangs up the phone, gets in touch with not her fiance, who's not answering the phone because he's just shouting into the ether if I'm around. our responsible friend, who probably drank more than all of us that night. And she goes, Danny says he's in a teepee. Does that make any sense? And he goes, yes. Hangs up the phone. They come get me. Right? So they're like, okay, the night's over for Danny. Lights out on this guy. This is the end. Right? It's sand everywhere. It's like Anakin Skywalker talking to Padme. He hates the sand. It's everywhere. It's in my boxers. It's in my shirt. It's in my beard. I'm pummeled. And so for whatever reason, like the world's spinning, like, you know, it's okay, big cat. You tried hard. You did everything you could. You were like a big starburst tonight, buddy. You did a lot tonight. You really hustled. You got after it. So somehow, some way, something pulled me back. Something pulled me back in, not sobriety, but I got like a jolt of energy in life. And it's like I got a mushroom in Mario. Okay. And I'm like, I'm good. I dust myself off, and they're like, this is the most miraculous turnaround of all time. I'm like borderline about to puke on myself and end everybody's night. And I go, let's go to the bar. And I ordered mint juleps for anyone that wanted one. Again, these are bizarre behaviors for a dude working in a nonprofit making $13,000. But I did. I have a $280 bar tab from Nikki Beach as testimony for me. And so I get myself and everyone who wants one a mint julep, and we continue on with the evening. But Prince passing out in a teepee on Nikki Beach, I just thought of that. Even though I asked for Prince, I was like, that'll be fun. And for whatever reason, that's what that reminds me of. Back to you, Toast.
That's such a good story. I have nothing that could top that. I have no story in the same stratosphere as that one. That's incredible.
It's a pretty great story. So it starts with Prince playing like a free concert to a couple thousand drunk buffoons in Miami. And me passing out in a teepee on Nikki Beach.
Yes, I feel like it was a spinoff of The Hangover.
I was thinking that the entire time he was talking about it. In an alternate universe,
yeah,
Danny was
Mr.
In
Chow.
Danny's in a real life version of The Hangover.
Okay, so I totally sabotaged that segment. I hope people were mildly entertained by that story, but it's true. Every word of that, by the way. The part that there's so many, because again, I'm telling recounting the story like these are legitimate decisions.
Yeah, from the guy that passed out in the teepee.
Yeah, none of my decisions were good. It wasn't like I go, here's a good thought process, but that's what happened. I'm just sharing with you guys what happened. And I don't have a good analogy, but it was like I felt, I don't know how to describe it better than this. I was pulled back by some force from the brink of, I had the spins, my night was over. Every time I've gone there, it's been, you pass out, you puke, or something worse, and it just, you feel this terrible. And somehow something like ripped me back from the precipice.
You just got that miraculous second wind.
And that has never happened before and never happened since in terms of drinking the alcohols. That's what I have for you.
That's hilarious.
Now, I ruined the segment by telling a story. We still want to do this. Darris will play mediator here. We've got a bunch of national reporters who have made the case against Washington's football 53. Saying they're not very good. We'll call some balls and strikes. We think they're wrong about some stuff. Maybe they have a point about some other stuff. I swear to you, we will do this next, unless Darris plays a song that reminds me of something else, and maybe I'll tell that story. But G&D here on The Fan. We are Grant and Danny. On 106.7 The Fan, Tobes is in for Jeeps. He's taking a well-earned couple of days. Hopefully his feet is up on vacation. We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Murat Estate Planning, Elder Law, Real Estate Transactions, Probate Administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Talking Local 53. Any training camp talk is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. So the national media, I would say, this is pretty fair to say, right, Tobes and Darris, and you pointed this out, Tobes, not thinking too highly of Washington. I think some of that's inevitable, right? Whenever somebody finishes at the bottom, even though you go worst to first all the time, just ask, you know, half of the divisions in the sport, but still there's a stink on you. Right when you pick in the top 10, when you have a blowout season, especially one that is so much worse than expectations. Like if Cleveland goes 5-12 this year, no one's going to be disappointed. A couple of Cleveland fans will, but it's like, yeah, that's how we have you.
Yep.
That's how we feel about you. When everyone thinks you've turned a corner and you're one of the cool kids, how dare you disappoint us? That kind of happens. So some of that stink, I think, is inevitable. Whether it's fair or not, I think that's kind of the conversation. But the national media not too kind to Washington. So Tobes is on the lookout for this. Compile the list, and you can add any color you want before we turn it over to Darius. But anything I'm missing there, just you kind of notice this and say, hey, look at all these trends.
Yeah, I mean, the concept is, I was thinking about, you've got local fans, some members of the media that are pretty high on this team, and understandably so. I think watching training camp, it feels like there have been some positive vibes around the team, some of the good that you've seen out there. And then you go on and read the latest NFL power ranking or the latest line ranking or whatever it is, and it's like, hey, by the way, your team sucks. And so it's like, which one is correct?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's probably somewhere in the middle, but which one's more correct? So I thought it was an interesting discussion to go back and look what national people are saying and see if, hey, is this fair or is this something that maybe they're just not plugged in every day like those that are out that practice every single day?
Because that certainly has happened before. Darius, I turn it over to you. Walk us through this.
So we'll start with Nick Shook of NFL.com. He has been on the show a couple times over the past year. And one of the things that we brought him on the show for most recently was that he ranked the Commanders 29th in his preseason power rankings. He goes on to say in his rankings of the Commanders being 29th that this is the year in which Dan Quinn must prove he has strong coaching chops or else. And it's also the season in which Daniels must prove he's more durable than he was in 2025. What say you about NFL.com's Nick Shook's take, having the Commanders 29th in the power rankings?
So he's right about Quinn, in my view. I think it's an underrated story here is there are two new coordinators. The handpicked guys were handpicked and then picked again to be removed. We got two new handpicked guys here. You don't get to do that a million times over. You better be right, especially when one of those units turned in pretty good results in terms of the offense, especially last couple seasons. But the 29th part, I think that's too harsh. I think that's too low. Now, it doesn't mean they're 10th, but I think 29th is too low because think about who's down at the bottom. Arizona, Tennessee, think about the Giants. Who I think will be better this year. But the Jets, Miami's going to pick first probably. I just named five teams. There aren't five teams between 32 and 29. I think that's too low.
Yeah, I think it's being a little bit ridiculous to have them that low in the power rankings. But, you know, some of the things in there, Dan Quinn must prove he has strong coaching chops. I think that's right. I think that's completely correct, that this is kind of a make or break season for Dan Quinn. The other point that he makes is that Daniels has to prove that he's more durable. And I think this is a fair point to make, obviously, of what happened last season. But for those that want to be on the Daniels side of things, can look and say, well, is one season of injury-prone, multiple different types of injuries, does that make you an injury-prone player, or is that the one-off type of season? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's going to be interesting to watch with Jaden this year, because you guys have pointed out multiple times in 2024 he got banged up with the rib injury. He still played through it, and I think that's something that's going to happen to any football player over time. B-Mitch refers to football as a 100% injury sport. If you play for any amount of time, you're going to sustain an injury. Luckily for Jaden last season, he didn't sustain the devastating injury. I know the elbow injury looked disgusting, but if you're going to choose one appendage on a quarterback to have that kind of an injury, it would be the left elbow, right? Not the right arm, neither one of the knees, right? So he's doing okay in that sense. You're hoping that was the fluky one, but I do think for a lot of people nationally, they look at last season and go, well, Jaden was hurt most of the season, just like we kind of expected when he came out of college. Now he's got to prove once again to a lot of the national media that he can stay healthy. I think that's fair, but maybe a little bit too overstated at times.
Pro Football Focus did a O-line ranking written by Gordon McGinnis, and they ranked the Commanders' offensive line 32nd. Now, they said here in his excerpt, before the injury to the left tackle, Laramie Tunsil, this group was set to rank just inside the top 20. Without Tunsil, this unit could really struggle if he ends up missing the full season. What say you about the 32nd ranking for the offensive line?
I think it's completely fair. Now, will they be 32nd? I tend to be a little bit higher on Brandon Coleman than the average person. I think Cosme's had a really strong camp, and I still believe in Connerly. So that's 60% of your offensive line. But at the same point, I don't feel great about Chris Paul, and I may be lower on the center position overall, whether Nick Allegretti plays there or not, than the average person. So I think it's fair, because if you're not watching this team every day, you're not as dialed in, and you're focusing on what's going on with the Raiders and number one overall pick Fernando Mendoza last night, you're not diving into what the heck is going on with Brandon Coleman and Chris Paul, then yeah, chances are you look at this O-line and go, not good, not good, not good. Probably okay in Cosme, and then not good, right? Like, so that's kind of the reality when you look at it from a 10,000-foot view.
So I said this when this came up the other day. I can't give you a deep dive into the Titans offensive line or the Cardinals or whomever. Okay. There are smarter people than me that we, at some point we have to defer to the smart folks. I don't know that they're 32nd. I don't know that they're 27th. I don't know what kind of case you can make. To me, the point here is they're in that bucket. And I do think that's fair. And I know nobody wants to hear that. But I think once you lose Tunsil, the cascade effect is you went from plus plus at left tackle. I think Coleman was going to be plus at left guard. It took longer than I thought. I thought it would have happened last year. It didn't, but I thought that was coming, where he would be a really good guard. Center, I'm going to get to in a second. Cosme, I think very strong. I think Arrow trending up for Connerly. Now, once you take Tunsil out of there, everything's a little bit worse and there's more exposure. Coleman, I think fine, solid, no problem at left tackle, not elite, not his fault, right? You don't complain about someone because they're not great. You try to do better, and they did, and it didn't work out. Bad luck with Tunsil. Now we're back to Chris Paul again, okay? To me, the center spot is the one I'm going. I think the plan stinks. I thought the plan stunk all throughout. It's unproven, and that's what they were going to go with as it was. And now Allegretti can't go 5 minutes without going to the blue tent. Cosme, very solid, and the reports on Connerly haven't been great. I'm still the believer. I still think there's upside there. But until you see it, until that's – remember how funny it was that people doubted Josh Connerly? Ha, ha, ha. Until that happens, it hadn't happened yet. Again, I'm a believer, but I get it. That group, as I just went through, not that impressive. It's not what should be happening in year three of a build. It's not what should be happening with a quarterback on his rookie deal when you've got a lot of salary cap space left to go. I understand the logistics that they thought maybe they were going to get Tyler Linderbaum, who went for $2 trillion, and that's too much for a center. I get that he's the highest paid center by $15, $16 million. Nobody's saying that you have to win that bidding. What I am saying is it just needs to be better than this. The end net can't be you're here in that bottom third of the league.
I can't blame you for missing out on Linderbaum, but I can blame you for cutting Tyler Biadasz for no apparent reason.
Never forget blaming that, yeah.
Like, it's one thing if you looked at it and you said they saved $8 million in cap space. They didn't. They saved next to nothing. And so I never fully understood that, where if it was a true competition, you didn't like Tyler Biadasz, well, fine. You can do the Tyler Biadasz and you can do the Nick Allegretti competition, but to go into the competition with Nick Allegretti, who I still don't feel great about, but if he's the starter, I can at least somewhat understand what they're trying to do. It cannot be Julian Good-Jones. Cannot be Matt Golden. Cannot be. So if that's going to be the case, I just didn't like the plan already. And I also just don't think that you can go in just assuming. I get that we're still, you know, multiple weeks away from the season opener. It's not like it's tomorrow. But at the same point, Nick Allegretti has not gone too complete full practices back-to-back in all of training camp. I'm just to expect that he's going to be ready to go for week one.
Yeah, and he didn't play much center
as
it is.
And by the way, for a lineman to play all 17 games, that's a lofty expectation. So the idea that Julian Good-Jones wouldn't start at center for one or two games this season, I don't ever want to see him start at center, much less have to start a couple of games there. No, not a good option.
That's Toby. I'm Danny. This is Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We've got a couple other things we want to do today, things that you're really optimistic about. We'll get to that in the next hour, but we're kind of calling balls and strikes here. We'll do this next as well on the national narrative about Washington and if they've got a point or if they're missing the mark. G&D on The Fan.